Nurse practitioner at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City and a member of the New York State Nurses Association. I'm Sonali Kohatkar, host and executive producer of Rising Up with Sonali, an independently produced, subscriber-supported program nationally syndicated to radio stations, free speech TV, and podcast platforms.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
Hello, KBOO supporters. It's tax season. To request a copy of your 2025 tax receipt, email membership at kboo.org or call at 971-801-1381. That's 971-801-1381 for your 2025 tax receipt. Thank you.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kboo.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm.
Follow KBOO on Instagram at KBOO Radio. Ear to the Streets.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's Black History and Futures Month here at KBOO, and in the next hour, we present Her Ministry of Love, inside the world of activist, mentor, and DJ Celeste Carey. KBOO's Dejan Reich Brown hosts.
For many people, music means more than music mm-hmm. that they hear with their ears.
Yes.
If music means more to you, can you explain this feeling?
I remember as a child picking up on a beat, a pulse, a keening, a sound. I would walk, and especially if I was walking to school so I could kind of get lost and stuff or whatever, mm-hmm. as a youngster and even now sometimes, I would walk and create a beat with my walk. That might be the beat. I'm walking. I'm making that with my feet. I might be doing something like a snare drum with my teeth, which was not a good idea because that grinds your molars down. I didn't know that then. I had to find some new way of doing the inner, you know, snares and rhythm. I liked the way sound would feel, well, how it would resonate sometimes when I was making sounds. Now, I don't have a singing voice. I tried. I got about a 1-inch range. You know, that's about as far as we ain't talking octaves or nothing like that. But I do have an engaging speaking voice, yes. And I learned how to sing it. I would hear music in everything. And I did play instruments when I was younger. I mean, people's voices, especially accents, you know, and especially when people speak a tonal language, you know, like a lot of Asian languages, it's singing.
Yes.
I love a good accent. And so I hear music in everything. And when I stopped playing instruments, probably in college, I was DJing, though. I started DJing in high school. Well, actually in grade school. But mm-hmm. high school is when, you know, you could do it someplace else mm-hmm. outside of your house. And I liked hearing how different songs had elements of each other or other genres in them. And I would play with that. Mm-hmm. And so music is, I hear this rhythm. I feel a rhythm. I feel a keening. It's like mm-hmm. sometimes there's this ee in the back of my mind. And I know nobody else hears it, and that's okay. It's for me.
What do you think music means for other people?
For some people, it's the same thing. For some people, it is their heartbeat. For some people, it is their form of telepathy. Mm. Because they hop up on that train and they ride it to somebody else's thoughts and neighborhoods, or you know, or they flag somebody else down and they come on over on their telepathic line, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like painting. It's food. I did say heartbeat and pulse. Mm-hmm. It's like breath. It keeps them alive. It saved my life when I was going through a lot of difficulties. And, well, you know, going back to my basic worldview, God gave it to us as a gift. So it has dimensions we haven't even discovered yet.
Yes.
I mean, people can take sound waves, which is essentially what music is, and they can focus those sound waves. Say they hooked up this table to a speaker, mm-hmm. and you pour some dust or some sand or anything on it. Those particles would coalesce into patterns. So that lets you know right now, there are multidimensional aspects to music that, again, we have no concept of. We don't have the ability to apprehend it or comprehend it. We just don't. We're not. That's like having a little red wagon try to compete with the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. It ain't built that way. Well, it's on wheels, but it ain't built like that. And so there are ways which we are built that we're not able to understand the fullness of music. We kind of feel that there's more to it, mm-hmm. and we're always searching, like people are searching for the lost chord, mm-hmm. you know, or things yeah, like that, yeah. and they're searching, they're trying to get in there because they can feel there's something more, mm-hmm. and I'm happy that our reach and grasp are not necessarily synchronized, because you need to yearn for more than you can actually grasp. You need to yearn. I mean, plants do that in the dark for light to grow. We need to do the same thing. And music is one of those aspects of light. Because if you think about it, you got this vast spectrum of energy that we try to describe. And there's like infrared and ultraviolet. And then there's different aspects for the noise, the sound. It's like whale song. Whale song actually penetrates and goes through your body.
Yes.
Okay. Music can do that for us too. But we're only just now beginning to wake up or recognize. So that's okay. What music is to everybody, really.
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel to host your show and even your Afrotainment?
Some days there are other things that compete with my interests, and I would like to do them and my show at the same time, but I don't have a clone. Mm. So those days I feel a little like too much stuff to do, too much cake, so little time. Something like that,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Most of the time, though, it's what I call my ministry of love, in that there are things that happen in this world, political, economic, spiritual, you know, mundane, like rain, that can tend to to play off the rain, dampen our enthusiasm for stuff. I an ability to function. And I like to put out music that really penetrates that and gives people what I call escape velocity.
Okay.
So that your mind is not like kind of boxed in, and you can actually free yourself and think deeper thoughts about anything, including yourself. You can think healing thoughts.
Yeah.
The stuff that's on the TV and the radio and the politics and in our billboards and everything in our face that's traveling along those same wavelengths that, you know, music can block us from even having our own healing self-song or self-healing vibrations. Mm. And so my whole thing is, not only do I want you to shake your bottom,
mm-hmm.
think, oh, those are some clever lyrics, oh, I can get with that.
Okay.
I want you actually to be able to get into a space where you're thinking healing thoughts.
Mm.
You know, you're not trapped in this little glass bell jar. You can get your mind out and think freely. When I go to the show, I get myself psyched up, psyched in, tuned in, connected, so I can do that. And it's hard on one way because I never know what I'm going to play. I might have one or two songs that I think I want to play these. Mm-hmm. Often I forget what I was going to play, and I just get up there and I pull in some energy from somewhere, and there it is. It goes.
Well, that's a great segue into the next question.
Uh-huh.
How do you choose the tracks or songs that you play?
I jokingly say I Mac my ADD. Okay. What I mean by that is I can take a song, and sometimes it's about the twang in the guitar or the twang in the singer's voice.
Okay.
Or the topic that they're singing about sounds twangy.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm going to work with that. And then I might take that and I go to a song that maybe has a similar twang. Mm. Or maybe I pulled out the bass beat and the twang. Okay. And so I'm going to see if I can match that with a song. So then I just try to feel, what vibe did I just lay down? What should the next track be? I feel music, like I said earlier. Mm. And I think, what is this feeling or what is this psychic energy I'm trying to get? And I will pull a song out of something I've heard, or I have a blessing. It doesn't always work. I can see a song, I can pull up something, and I can try. I think this will work. And sometimes I get to listen to the first few notes, and I go, oh, yeah, this is going to work. Sometimes I don't know what it sounds like, and I have to cover the dump button, you know. Okay. And I just play it, and I don't do a playlist. I do put my song in one of the, how do we say, cloud-based apps.
Okay.
You know, I got a few of them. Okay. And so I'll do my files, and what I do is I name them now. I used to just put them for the date. Okay. But, like, this file I'm using right now is called I Fall for Autumn.
Okay.
And so what I did is I just threw a whole bunch of songs in there, and sometimes I'll play from that file, and they're not in any order, and sometimes I'll just hear a song and go, oh, no, this needs this. This artist does this. Do they have a song? And I'll be scrounging real quick trying to find it. And if I can find it, good, and if I don't, then I'll just put the next best thing that comes to the surface. So it's kind of like ADD. I just can ping. I can feel. I can hear. Mm. I don't have a playlist when I come in.
Mm.
I might know two songs. I usually try to find what is the person playing in front of me. If they're playing something I want to beat off of, okay. I might.
Okay.
You know, and if they're always doing blues.
Yes, yes.
You know, but other times I just think, I don't know, let's play this.
Yeah.
Boom, and there it is.
And that's a really interesting process. And then as it progresses throughout your show, you try to match the vibes and...
Sometimes I have a sound effect. Mm-hmm. That sometimes I use, which is a record scratch, a long scratch. Sometimes I have I haven't used this one in a long time. Mm-hmm. It's like the squealing of brakes. Like if I'm gonna do a 90-degree turn, and then I do what's called segues. I have another file, and these songs can be anything from. The shortest one I have is 17 seconds long, and the longest one might be like maybe 2 minutes, and they're little short pieces that just. People who've listened to Michelle know, oh, she about to do a change-up. Okay. And then sometimes I might come in and just make an announcement and then do a change-up.
Okay.
You know, it's how you break it, but you don't break it.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another question.
Uh-huh.
What is the importance of community to you?
Okay, now, you might have to define it a little bit more. When you say community, you know that's a broad term. Now, if you mean in terms of radio and community media, that's one thing. If you mean just a group of folks, that is another thing. So I'm going to split it up.
Okay.
I'm going to first say community is any group of beings that you either join or coalesce with for whatever effort or value that is important to you at that particular time.
Mm.
So your community could be your neighbors.
Yeah.
You're doing a neighborhood watch, doing a cookout party. Your community could be the people that you work with that you like and hang out with later.
Mm.
Your community could be the people who are part of some larger agency or organization or effort that you want to hang with. So like a community without borders might be you are people who believe in gardening in the backyard.
Yeah.
Okay? Or it could be your union.
Mm-hmm.
you know, or it could be because of your ethnicity or whatever, like Black Student Union, Native Americans, you know, for clean water, whatever.
Yes.
Community media, however, is different. Community media, and that is a core value of mine. This is one of the reasons why I have put in 30 plus. I actually have been in KABU longer than any other place I can think of, and I have been at KABU exactly half my life now.
Really?
Yeah, because I moved here in 88, and I joined KABU in 89. Or was it 88? I can't remember. It might have been the winter of 88. But I joined community media because as a journalist and as an information officer in the Air Force, your thing is to learn the principles and values of using words and ideas to both shape a community, inform a community, empower a community. And community media is that effort of getting information out about what's going on in our worlds, not from, like, you know, a network news channel or a specific print media or a radio station, but the people around who are seeing things happening and realizing there's a lack of information here that keeps this group of people from doing better for themselves or having ways to shape the policies that affect them, or knowing that this particular practice is a health hazard. It makes it really important that we have some kind of system to teach people good journalistic values and practices, and then to go out and capture that information that's untainted by corporate or commercial or political or militaristic agencies, influences, policies, and agendas. So I really, and I mean, I've been active in community TV and radio, and actually in newspapers too, because I've written for a few. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that it's important for us to know, you know, what is going on. When a lot of the media founders and political founding people talked about the importance of certain aspects of society, like maybe having an armed militia or a representational government. They thought, yes, maybe about the elites, but also the principles were the same. We need to have somebody bringing us the information so we know how to make sound judgment. Well, we need that for ourselves as ordinary people. And ordinary people are really the base on which everything is resting. Even the elites are resting on us. They know that. That's why they don't want us acting outside their interests. But, you know, the thing is I believe that we need to have a voice of ourselves, for ourselves, to ourselves, by ourselves, out of ourselves, so that we can be informed and make sound decisions for our well-being, as opposed to what the elites and the power folks are wanting for us. That's it.
So what I'm hearing to you is that community media is of utmost importance when it comes to shaping our paradigms. What I mean by that is how we view the world and move
in the world. So, you know, not just shaping a paradigm, but also revising it when it's off the rails. And that's an important thing. And it allows us, in our constructing a common language, it allows us to also construct a common metric or value system for what is going to work for us. Now, one size does not always fit all.
Yes.
Except in the abstract spiritual sense. But we're not going down that path right now. We don't have that much time. There is the idea that whatever we do as human beings should benefit us as a species and not as necessarily individuals or individual pockets or groups. So, you know, we don't need to have a law that seems like it's right but does not benefit us all. Here's an example. Why do we need a new cell phone every year? Why do they have planned obsolescence to make us need a new cell phone every year? Why do they make a law that allows the people who make these technologies to grow obsolete? Why do we make a law to protect their ability to make money off of us? So that when cell phones became prominent, landlines are saying, we're losing money. So then they go and they lobby our legislative bodies to say, we losing money. We can't have that. Okay, well, we'll make a law that they got to pay a tax because you're losing money. And that's what happened. That happened for a long time. We were paying some portion of our cell phone bill or whatever. There was like a recoup fee because landlines were saying, well, where my money? See, and you know, and we need a metric to help us. So where does community media come into that? We talk to people. We talk to the people who are suffering. And we talk to the people who did the deed. Mm-hmm. And we try to get the backstory. And then we come back and we tell everybody. So then you can make a choice to say, you know what? That nickel you're charging for paper sacks or plastic bags, that is because y'all just need to make a certain amount of money, because you're not necessarily taking that money and putting it back in the environment. And you're saying, well, we gotta charge you this nickel because that's the law now. No, you went and lobbied somebody to make it a law. And so our job in community media, using that example, is to go in there, do some digging, mm-hmm. with the skills that we've taught each other, mm-hmm. and that the same other folks use, and expose how this is not for our benefit.
Yes.
So community media is not just a vent to let pressure off. It's light to shine on, you know, what's going on. It's the voice that lets people hear what's going on. And it's the voice which people talk back to both government and to whatever agency is using. Even KABU. KABU really needs sometimes, like any other community media, mm-hmm. to hear, like, are we meeting the needs? Are we serving you right? Are we mm-hmm. doing this right? What are we doing wrong? Okay. We also need to hear from ourselves. Mm-hmm. Are we doing good? How are we doing? You know? Yes, yes. And then we need to hold each other accountable. Well, you said you were the best at this, but you're not doing this. Mm-hmm. So we want everybody to know, okay, that's community and then community media.
Understood.
You are listening to Her Ministry of Love, inside the world of activist, mentor, and DJ Celeste Carey, hosted by KABU's Dejon Reich Brown. Back to the show.
What impact would you like your art to have on the community media?
The purpose of this show was to showcase the incredible depth and richness of music by Black artists worldwide. Mm-hmm. When I moved here, most of the music you heard by Black artists was mediocre, meaning that they did not pick the best music to actually inspire and stimulate and motivate people to do better. Mm. Now, that's not necessarily a commentary on some of the artists that were playing, because there was a lot of good music, and I'm not just talking about top 40. Even on the jazz and blues stations, they didn't always play Black artists. And that those two genres are our creation.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So, you know, I'm seeing this and I'm thinking, okay, and I was involved, and myself and a few other folks, you know, who were from back east, mm-hmm. we grew up with a whole different style of radio. I was just appalled. It's like, is this what's on the commercial corporate radio stations? This is whack, you know. And then I also came from not only mainstream but also alternative. And then I was into a lot of different music, because growing up in St. Louis, Missouri, which I did, and listening to primarily white stations, because that was what it was, until we had a Black station, one, it was AM. And then even if you listen to the rock and the pop stations, they hardly ever played Black artists, you know? And so you get a little frustrated. It's like, yes. And my parents, you know, even though I'm mixed race, I'm mostly Native American and Black. Mm-hmm. My parents played everything, mm-hmm. okay? And I would listen to what they were playing, and I listened to the radio and think, where's Ike and Tina Turner on the radio? Where's Nancy Wilson? Where's the Staples Singers or Mahalia Jackson. Yes. I'm not hearing this on the radio. I know there's a whole bunch of music out here, but I never hear it anywhere. And I listen to all the stations. I listen to the pop stations, the rock stations, you know, the church stations, everybody. I just listened. I didn't care. I listened to news and commentary. Okay. So I was disappointed. And then when I got the opportunity here at KBOO, I wanted to showcase how I learned stuff and the way music should be. I was the first person to have a non-genre show. You either play rock, or you play reggae, or you play blues, or you play some R&B, or Caribbean. Now, this is no slam on the my minority brothers and sisters, and I hate using that word, and then people of color also is vague and strange. Yeah. But all of the not-white programmers, yes. That's not a bash on them, because we were trying to forward our cultures.
Yes.
Okay? But it really frustrated me that, I don't know if you necessarily want to put this in there, but I'm put that. There was a lot of policing of music by non-white programmers, by white programmers here. Mm. Oh, you can't play that. Why? It's not black enough. What do you know? Oh, well, we don't. That's top 40. And it's what the community wants to hear. Oh, that's not black music. Who told you that? And, you know, and we dealt with a lot of nonsense like that. You know, it's not the same now for a lot of reasons. But I would play songs, and I would have people call me up, sometimes black folks, but mostly white. That's not black music. I said, so when was the last time you actually listened to the roots of rock? You know, and it goes beyond Chuck Berry, and it goes beyond folks like Little Richard and Big Mama Thornton and them. You know, and then it would be like I would play all of the genres, but I didn't make a mishmash of it. I had an ear for music, like I told you. Yeah. So I would mix it up.
Okay.
Then there's the thing with bringing on new genres, because I also was the first person to play house music, acid jazz, drum and bass, Detroit techno. I was just last week talking about Kwum. I will never say this right. It's out of South Africa. Mm. It's G-Q-O-M, Kwum. It has a click in it, okay? No, you know how, like, Bantu, and there's another couple of African language to have a sound? Yeah. See, I can't do it. Okay. I've been practicing. I can't get it. But it's G-Q-O-M.
Okay.
You know, and it's like a real dark techno music. You know, Kuduru is another music I brought. And so I would bring stuff, and I say, this is the richness. And I even have on my show, it's like, black music is to American music like Africa is to civilization. We are the cornerstone. Without black music in America, you would have roots folk, which came out of maybe Irish and, well, the whole Celtic thing. My father's father was Irish. Celtic music, a lot of it I know. Celtic, and so Irish and Scottish you would have, because that would be Appalachia.
Okay.
You would have... Maybe if they took some Native American music, you'd have a little bit. But you would not have jazz. You would not have blues. Mm-hmm. You'd have no Dixieland, nothing. Mm-hmm. You would not have hip-hop. You would not have R&B. You would not have disco like you had disco, because there was a marked difference between black disco and, say, European disco. You would not have house music. You would not have techno. Techno was created by a black man named Juan Atkins. Kraftwerk played what they called techno, but Kraftwerk called their music machine music. You would not have drum and bass. You would not have reggae. You would not have dub. You'd not have cumbia. You'd not have none of that stuff if you took the African influence out and then the African indigenous aspects. Because you think of all this music comes out of Cuba and Costa Rica, that's black and indigenous folk. There it is. So, you know, I would do this. And my whole thing is to showcase what it is, how things are different, how a lot of this stuff is good. You know, so I'll play black opera. You know, I'll play the Wild Chapatulas. The Wild Chapatulas are a band out of New Orleans and Louisiana, and they're black and Native American. And there it is. I mean, you just would not have that richness. And that was my whole purpose, is to showcase this is what we got, y'all. How about you?
I love that so much. What role do you think music plays in our everyday lives?
Some people say it's a soundtrack. And that's why even sometimes the most whack top 40 popular corporate-based thoroughly commercial song will have significance for people because it occurs in a situation where it adds some flavor to it, you know. But I think music is more than that. Like I said, it's got to be your pulse. You know, it's got to be your ability to hear. Okay, in scripture, everything sings. Everything vibrates. Everything has noise. Science is catching up and finding out that's true. You know, even the earth has a resonance. Schumann resonance is what it's called. You know, we all as electromagnetic entities have resonance. So you got to connect and find that song in you. And the whole hope is that music that you hear produced by other entities around you will some kind of way enhance your song as you enhance their song. And you have this reflexive relationship going on where I see you seeing me as I am seeing myself seeing you, and you're seeing yourself seeing me, you know, all of that reflexive thing going on. It's an element. It's a dimension. It's an element, just like, you know, salt is an element. It's a dimension, just like time, space, width, depth, height is a dimension. And if you are willing to do that, what it will do is connect you, ground you better. But, you know, it'll also make you outgrow some aspects of music that are maybe not as life-affirming as you need. You know? Because think about some music that you listen to might have been the thing, as they say in the street, a bop. You know, you know, and then, you know, maybe just a week later you listen to that and you think, oh my, I didn't know I was two dimensional. I was thinking half inch thoughts. You know,
that was such a like lovely way to describe that. And I always say thank you for that, because I have the same relationship with music, and I see that, and I just wish that other people would see that as well.
People can. It's a matter of exposing it to them and them to it, and then gently kind of leading them on to a progression of, what is the word I want? Advancement is not it, and growth is a little overplayed. But it is a lifeward progression. It is a growth. It is a maturing of your ability to both hear it, analyze it, receive it, let it help you grow, and then grow it and throw it back. So, yeah. I got some songs that I can listen to, and I jokingly call them on the radio my songs. If I'm ejected into space or I'm on an island, I'll hear these songs forever and ever, and I'll be okay. And then there's some other songs like, Lord, I don't want to ever hear that again, please. Why? You know, I got that. I will listen to anything. I will listen to anything. But if it tends to not have a life-affirming, life-sustaining arc to it, it's like, I don't do death metal. There's a lot of elements in that are just not life-affirming. I don't have time for it, you know. I want something that's going to make me grow. And, you know, maybe I Believe in Miracles by Hot Chocolate from England was that song, and maybe it ain't no more.
Okay. All right. Make your statement then.
Some days it is, some days it ain't.
All right. What would you say to the youth who have a passion for music and not quite learned how to dive into that passion or curate that passion, you know?
I like that you said curated, because one of the things I was thinking was, if you have a passion for music, the first thing is to figure out, how does that passion lead you to interact with music? Do you simply want to listen to good music? Are you driven to play an instrument? Are you driven to take instruments and listening and merge them somehow? Because for me, my show, the songs I play are like individual notes in one song that lasts for 3 hours. I don't consciously think that, but I know that's what I'm doing. Because I am playing my music like an instrument. I am playing, when I pick these songs, they are like strung on a bead, or they're like, each song is an individual note in a long song. And that is how I'm going to get a little deep here and also a little scientific. That's how I kind of transmute energy. I don't know how to explain it any other way. I am not constantly going, I need a C here and a F sharp here and this is a A. No, I'm not doing that. But what I'm doing is it's almost like the songs are like Legos and I'm forming something. But what I'm forming with the Legos is both solid as this table, but it's also like stacking light together, like a rainbow might be stacked. And it's also like creating some kind of sonic response in your brain, the same way you feel when you hear a train at night, the train whistle, or you hear whale song, which is almost like a train. I call them the land whales. The trains are the land whales because they like whales making sounds. Or like ideas flitting through your head. And so it's like I'm trying to take energy and spin it into something and throw it out there so that it fulfills something that a person didn't even know they needed, maybe. And it's like it opens up something, it sets people free, it opens up your mind, it opens up your chest so your heart can beat bigger, you know. It makes you want to dance, it makes you want to think, you know, it makes you want to be a better person, you know, just all of that. It makes you want to be, who am I? So, you know, when you're thinking as a young person about what is music and how am I supposed to relate to it, think about how it draws you in. Because for me, I wanted to play an instrument because I wanted to make that sound. And then also, I now use the songs to, it's almost like create extra reality. I don't know. I'm getting a little deep here.
I love it.
You know, it's like, okay, you're right. You know what it's like when you sit and you look at a blank sheet of paper. And then you create something. And then sometimes we look at what we wrote, and especially if it's good, and we thought, that came out of me, where'd that come from? You know, but then you realize you have created something in time and space that does not have necessarily physical substance, but it still has the same effect as physical substance does, as well as it has the same wake that a thought has or a boat moving through water has. And so music can change you. Music is, I don't know how else to say it. It's like it's multidimensional and it has profound effects. And let's stop there because I think I fell off the edge.
Oh, no, you certainly didn't. Let me tell you. You're giving me everything I need to know. Like, thank you very much. So we already talked about the youth. And we got that message for them, and I love that message. What action verb would you tell your youth audience that's maybe reading your explanation on how to identify the passion and create that passion when it comes to music?
Well, there's not one word, and so that is a challenge right there.
Okay,
the first thing I want to say is be curious.
Nice.
Be curious. Be curious as to how music enriches and affects your life, your thinking, your mood, how you want to be a better person, and all of that. Be honest. Have integrity. Do not use this as a manipulative form, but use it as a communicative tool and a bridge to not only sharing understanding between yourself and, you know, your listeners, but a bridge to possibility.
I love that.
You know, so that's be curious, be honest, and be persistent.
Yes.
Because the first few ways you try to express yourself may not be the right ones. And be honest with yourself. No, I suck at this. This is not. But I do this very well. Maybe that's what I should be doing.
Okay.
Some people make beats. They can't make a song, but they can make beats.
Yeah.
Some people write words that will shatter all kinds of challenges and obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And some people write music. And some people will not be able to do any of those, but they can take all of those and make something.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Be persistent. Be honest. Be inquisitive. Be curious.
Love it.
You know, and then love music. Mm-hmm. Because, just kind of go with me here on this
okay.
one. If music is a spirit, and you love that spirit's going to love you back. What kind of rich relationship could you possibly have? It's unknowable.
Yeah.
There are no boundaries.
It's unfathomable.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I love that.
You are tuned into Her Ministry of Love, inside the world of activist, mentor, and DJ, Celeste Carey. Your host is KBOO's own Dejon Reich Brown. Back to the show.
You were recently honored with KBOO's first Diane Carl Mentorship Award.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, how does that make you feel?
I will fully explain this once we're not recording.
Okay.
Because
okay.
this is, there's some things... You know how when you criticize family,
mm-hmm.
you bring them in tight. You don't broadcast it.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So there's something in that it's both a good feeling and a bad feeling.
Okay,
the good feeling, though, and the thing that I really focus on, I always assumed that being a mentor was part of my opportunity here. I never saw myself as trying to do anything like that for recognition. As a matter of fact, I'd taken some people under my wing, which later on just didn't like me or didn't like me when they came in. But I said, but I got what you need. We ain't got to be bosoms, but, you know, here it is. And I've had the opportunity of training a lot of people. And I like to think that I learn stuff so that I can pass it on to somebody. I don't think it's supposed to be, I done earned all this money, this here, my money. I think I have earned these lessons and these opportunities, and I can see how to transfer this information in a way that will make somebody else have a profitable, you know, a venture with this.
Okay.
And so therefore, I am obliged to give them this.
Yes.
Because I still have the benefit. I'm not giving anything away from me, but it's not mine to keep.
Yeah.
You know, so I just would, anytime anybody wanted to learn anything, I would teach them. Now, I had a few people here who mentored me, and I think I mentioned it. Eugene Rashad was the news director, and he, you know, when I told him I had gone to Mizzou Jury School, he said, oh, we putting you to work. So he was the first person to really assign me stuff. But a woman who has since passed on, Beth Hyam, she was the volunteer coordinator at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I came in and talked to her, we connected on, and she used to challenge me. She says, don't be lazy. You got skills and you got talents. You need to be, come on in here. This can be your playground.
Mm.
Another person was Kathleen Stevenson. She was the public affairs director when I came in. And she tapped me to be one of the folks for our talk strip when we first started doing talk strip in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And she also encouraged me to do book reviews and interview folks. And I don't know if you know who Michael Eric Dyson is. You should look him up.
Okay.
You know who Ndzazike Shange is? Oh, you should look her up.
Okay.
Derek Bell?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay. You should look him up.
I got some homework.
You got a lot of homework. But anyway, she would hook me up with a lot of good interviews from and some really famous people. And that challenged me and made me rise to occasion. I would do, and on the talk show, I would interview people who had PhDs, sometimes plural, and stuff that I knew nothing about. I remember when Kathleen asked me, you want to do this thing on Chinese economy? And I go, I don't know anything about it, and I'm not sure I really want to. I mean, it's not on my to-do list. But she challenged me, and I got up and I read, and I did my research. And one of the best things you can ever hear is from somebody that you are interviewing is that, oh my God, that's a good question. Oh, thank you. This was a great interview. And then I felt like, okay, I'm not perpetrating, because I actually did try to ask an intelligent question. Now, because I'm on the spectrum, and my particular malady is what they used to call Asperger's, syndrome, and I have ADD. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I would get teased for being Captain Obvious because I would ask what people thought were obvious questions. And it's like, no, you all are skating all around this. The shy part of me won't let me just speak it up because I'm not 100% sure, but I kind of peep that something is awry, and I'm going to ask the question that is begging to be asked. And people sometimes, I found out, is like when you ask what they want to diminish as an obvious question, it's because you are either uncovering somebody's duplicity and dishonesty, or you are shining the light from a perspective they never even imagined. So, you know, doing this stuff with Kathleen was like that because it would make the ordinary person feel like, I'm not so dumb. Because she would say, no, sometimes the way you ask questions, it may sound like you're kind of dumb, but no, you're asking it from a perspective that's making people uncomfortable, either because you're uncovering that they're not addressing it, or you're making them look at things from a whole different perspective. Mm. And so that encouraged me to keep doing that. So she was a mentor. Yeah. And there was one other person. Oh, Chris Merrick. He was the music director. I don't know what Chris thought of me. I'm sure everybody thinks I'm strange because they tell me that all the time. And I said, I'm a sister from another planet. How about that? I'm a do that.
Look,
you know,
it's not on them. I hate when people do that.
So oh, no, I'm used to it. I'm used to it. It's been that way since I was a kid. Yeah. Even my own brothers and sisters think something's wrong with me. You know, and I said, well, apparently I'm not from here. I'm not for you in this minute. So let me just finish doing my thing.
Okay.
But, you know, those were my mentors. And I just, it made me happy that that had been seen. And it's like I gained more territory, I guess, for KBOO. I hope I did by inspiring people to want to be mentors.
Yes.
You know, that's what I hope it did. And to care enough about other people to reach out and bring them in.
That last part means a lot. I love that. One of the hallmarks of this award is exemplifying leadership and mentorship. What inspires you to be a leader?
I am the oldest of seven kids. I had four brothers under me. And even though they brilliant, had their own ideas about stuff, I would a lot of times come up with fun things to do. And I grew up with my brothers and then two male cousins after that and just a bunch of boys. So it gave me enough of that confidence of being able to engage the guys in things that they found interesting to feel confident in challenging people who were bullies. And so that being like the head of my little home posse and then also having been bullied and having had to fight, you know, both of my brothers because I was the oldest and I was built more like my dad and they were built more like my mom. And it's not that they couldn't defend themselves, but not against some big honking huge folks.
Yeah.
So we would have to fight. And again, like I told you, I don't like injustice.
Yes.
And I was taught by hanging out with a lot of assertive and confident folk that if you know that this is wrong and you want to do something about it, have the confidence that you need. All my life, people have thrust me into leadership positions without me seeking it. There's a few times when I have sought it. Like, there was a couple times, like, when I was served on the board here, I served 10 years in a row, and I got elected to president three times in a row consecutively. And on one hand, that was a burden because it's like, oh, my God, these people see something in me that I have no idea. But it happened in other places because, you know, I told you I was a cadet in the Air Force. And this is back in 77. This white man decided to make me one of the flight commanders for a week. And I'm a black woman. That blew my mind. I didn't know. But see, the thing was, I didn't know if I was being set up to fail or set up to succeed. So I tried my best, and I ran into a couple of obstacles, which are funny, but we don't really have time. But it showed me that people saw leadership in me, and I had to own that and step up and fill in those shoes. And maybe that was what I was called for. And so there's no time to be shy. There's no time to be a shrinking violet. There's no time to worry about you being a short black woman, you know. Somebody saw something, and so find out and then bring that forward and meet the need of the moment. So leadership to me has become, it's kind of fraught with challenge, because I'm rarely just out there seeking leadership. Sometimes I am, I'm not going to lie. But for the most part, I get picked, and I have to try to make sure I'm rising and expressing my idea of that need for leadership the way the situation actually asks for it.
Wow.
You know, because you can go off on a tangent, and your ass can just be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't want to be wrong, because people are counting on me to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I was a nurse. I had just graduated from nursing school. And I was working in newborn ICU. I don't even know how I got there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did graduate top of my class, but that doesn't really translate all the time.
Okay.
All I know is that the very next day, I'm handling babies that could fit into this space right here. Now, this is back in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Fit now. Now, this is nothing. This is a big baby now. You know, but my point being is that you, when somebody calls you, you got to really be humble, and you got to be honest, and you have to dig and find out what is it that you have in you that you're supposed to give, and give that, and no more and no less. So leadership, I do it when I have to.
I heard that.
When I'm not asked to, I'm okay with sitting in the chill in the cut.
Yes.
It's like I tell people, say, I'm an alpha personality, but I'm an alpha who's okay with laying in the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm needed, then here I am. And when I'm not, it's like I'm chilling, okay? Because I earned this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that. How and when did you start volunteering at KBOO?
I moved here. I had already done community television. I'd already done radio. I'd been a DJ at a rock station in St. Louis. I had done cable access in St. Louis and Columbia, Missouri, and video production.
Okay.
So I joined KBOO because that was an interest of mine, and to keep my skills sharp, because the company I transferred up here with, I wanted to go into the video department. So I remember I mentioned I wanted to go to design school. Well, they didn't have one here, but I took the next best thing. So I was at the Northwest Film and Video Center. I was at the Cable Access Station. It's Open Signal now, but it used to be called Portland Cable Access.
Okay.
You know, and I did shows. I ended up being on their board and being chair of their board and producing shows.
Really?
Tim Reed, that's his name. Okay.
Okay.
He played Venus Flytrap. You should look him up. He's
okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay. But and so it was part of my whole plan of getting up here and getting into media and doing all that. And I just walked in and joined. I was used to volunteering. I've been volunteering stuff since I was a kid. My mom, she was a stay-at-home mom, and she didn't have to work, but she was brilliant. She was an artist. She was prime organizer. She used to do stuff for American Red Cross, March of Dimes, all kinds of stuff, raise money, do social thingies because she could. And so she used to drag me around. I used to volunteer for politicians, answering phone banks. I just did it. That's what we did in my family. So, you know, volunteering was part of the lifeblood, you know, that is like, this is how you pay your rent for being on the planet, you know. So, yeah, that was it. That was it.
I love that.
So, you know, volunteering at KBOO was both feeding that thing as well as part of my whole plan for my particular brand of world conquest.
Nice. So, that leads into the next question.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen KBOO change and evolve over the years?
Well, let me pick one.
Okay.
When I first started here, everybody did live shows. There were one or two people who did pre-recorded, because the time slot they were given for the show, because you would apply for a time slot if it opened up, and you had to have volunteered and filled in shows and done stuff and done all the training.
Yes.
So people did pre-recorded shows rarely. Okay. When COVID hit, and my colleague Jenna and I were station managers, and people couldn't come to the station, we had to do something that KBOO had resisted, kicking and screaming. And that is, learn how to pre-record your shows, because you couldn't come in and have a system that would allow the staff to upload programs, pre-recorded programs. KABU would not do that. And when we told them you can't come in and do your shows, people lost their minds. So the fact that people were able to overcome that and start doing pre-recorded program and have that now being the way we do it, that is wonderful.
Okay.
Now that's a positive thing.
Yes.
Here's a negative thing. This was old, and you might not even believe this could happen. KABU used to have many more male voices on the air than female voices. We decided we needed gender parity. Do you know these guys fought that tooth and nail? Oh, yes. And not just the white males, but some of the black males as well. Some of the males of color. And it's like, seriously? Seriously? And then you'd hear all these specious, raggedy-ass arguments like, well, women just don't have... Women don't have what?
What?
Women don't have what?
Right.
What quality or talent or skill or attitude were, you know, or mental capacity were you about to say we lacked to do whatever it is that you're trying to keep us, you know, and we fought.
That.
We fought tooth and nail, to get that. And it was unfortunate that people took that attitude. Now, it is not as big as a problem, but it's kind of like they used to say, women are not good at math, and you come to find out women have a whole different capacity for looking at math than men do, which in some ways is better. Because, well, I believe there was a movie made based on a book, based on real life, called Hidden Figures.
I watched that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know exactly what you were
Read the book. And remember some of that stuff, because they tried to tell us, well, women were sitting up here doing this math, some of it, and advanced math, mind you, not arithmetic. We're talking about advanced calculus and algebraic equations that look like you're writing Sanskrit, you know. Please. But, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And we had, like I said earlier, we had the same issues with some of the folks of color, because some of the programs will try and tell people, well, you can't play this. It's like, this is what our community wants to hear. Are you the gatekeeper?
Yeah.
And I had many a fight up in here and there. You know, in various committee meetings or when I was on the board, it's like, oh, and they weren't used to me. And I, you know, because this is, I was probably one of the first waves, well, not the first, because there were folks in the 60s and 70s. But one of the waves, you know, in the 80s or new blood, what I used to call it, I used to have a phrase for me and my homies, we were new jack, new black, you know. And I had even made us t-shirts, you know, new jack, new black. But, you know, they weren't used to somebody just, you know, advocating so emphatically for self and articulating and being eloquent. And it's like, oh, you speak so well. And I said, I'm glad I do, because you don't. Because sometimes you'd be mad when people would say that. You probably, you may have heard it, because they still say, oh, you're so articulate. And
oh,
compared to
gosh,
what? To
exactly.
you?
Exactly. And it's like, when people say that about us, it's like, what are you implying? That we're not?
Like, oh, you think I'm supposed to roll up and go, woof, 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 woof. No.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's one of the things that I've seen KABU, you know, improve at. But,
okay.
I mean, again, I have a love-hate relationship with KABU, because there are some things that this station just refuses to do right. And when I gave my speech for getting the award, I said, you need to start holding people accountable. Holding people accountable is not a crime. It is not rude.
Yes.
It is not offensive. It is making them honor what they said they would do. That's all.
You've been listening to Her Ministry of Love, inside the world of activist, mentor, and DJ Celeste Carey, hosted by KABU's own Dejon Reich Brown for Black History and Futures Month here at KABU. Tune in to Celeste's show, An Evening of Afrotainment, every Saturday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Thanks for being with us.
tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, February 24th at 10 a.m. for a special remembrance of Oregon State Senator, advocate for African Americans in Portland, Oregon and beyond, educator,